The reading from Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 20, Lord Vishnu's appearance in the sacrificial arena. Text
35, 36.
King Prithu worshipped the demigods, the great sages, the inhabitants of Pitriloka, the inhabitants of Dandaranaloka, those of the Siddhaloka, Sharanaloka, Anagaloka, Kinaraloka, Apsaraloka, the earthly planets and the planets of the birds. He also worshipped many other living entities who present themselves in the sacrificial arena. With folded hands, he worshipped all of these, as well as the Supreme Personality, Godhead, and the personal associates of the Lord, by offering sweet words and as much wealth as possible. After this function, they all went back to their respective abodes, following in the footsteps of Lord Vishnu. Mugyanati Mirandasya Janaganaslakayam Shaksus Militam Jena Tasmai Shi Gurve Namaha Shi Chaitanya Mahavisam Shapitam Jena Bhutale Vayam Upakaramaya Dadati Sapadantika Shi Krishna Chaitanya Pravunityananda Shi Adhati Radha Shi Vasari Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So the false ego is so strong that everyone has a high estimation of himself, especially their mundane knowledge. Bhaktivinoda says that the biggest obstacle in the path of devotion is this mundane knowledge. We become puffed up thinking we know so much. But the example is given of the child in the womb. The child in the womb is also living. He has some consciousness there. But he can't understand what's outside. So many varieties, so many things going on. He's packed up in his little environment there. So something like that. We're in this little limited environment, Earth planet, one dimension. I read someplace that there was something like 100 dimensions, 64 dimensions. I don't really know the exact number. But what do we have? We have three dimensions here on this level, at this platform. So how can we know what's going on in another dimension? It may be right in front of us, but we can't see it. We can't perceive it because of our limited senses. Just like even dogs, they can hear sounds that we can't hear. There are colors there that we can't see, ultra-red, ultraviolet. So we have a limited instrument for perceiving the environment, enough to at least maintain the species for some time. But we shouldn't think we can understand everything with these senses. That's the point. We should be a little humble to appreciate there are things beyond our conception. But the scientists, they don't like this idea. They think, oh no, we can. Maybe there's some things that are still problems we haven't figured out yet, but in the course of time we'll figure out everything. And then we'll become the knowers of all. In the Bible we read that that was the sin of Adam and Eve, that they wanted to eat the fruit, where they would know everything. That way they become God. This is a disease. You think you can know everything, then you're God. If you know everything, you're God. So the scientists, the atheists, if people are thinking they can know everything. Maybe not today, but just give us a little time and we'll know everything. But in the meantime, they can't even control their own senses. They have problems with smoking, overeating, and neurotic, this and that. Become addicted to sex life, chasing it. Young girls. I was reading this professor, 75-year-old professor, he's still seducing young students. There's no end to it. But they think they're so knowledgeable. But they don't have knowledge of their own mind, how it's working, how it's forcing them, controlling them, pushing them, their own mind. What do we read? That there are six gratifying urges, right, that are pushing us. Mind is one of them. Then there's also the anger. It's pushing. We don't have to indulge in it, but it's pushing us and we just do it anyway. And then we regret, oh, I shouldn't have said that. We say things in anger that later on we lament. So it's not really for our self-interest. We don't have control. It's pushing us. Anger. And then the mind. Everyone knows the mind is a big obstacle, pulling us here and there. I was giving that example last night when the devotee came to India and then he wanted to go back. He went and got a ticket. The father was disturbed. Oh, you've come all this way? You don't want to accept my direction, but your mind is telling you, go here, and you have to go here. Your mind is telling you, go here, you have to go. You think you're independent, but the mind is controlling you. And what is the mind? It's not even your friend. It's a composite of so many experiences you have, and it's not really a good guy. Everybody has that experience. You lament later, oh, why did I do that? So the mind, and then what is the next gratifying urge? The tongue. The tongue has two functions. It wants to taste, and it wants to talk. And both of those things get us in trouble. We eat too much because of taste, then we get diabetes, indigestion, some problem is there, overweight. Because we can't control the tongue. It wants to taste more and more. Maybe we're had enough, but still we want to take one more piece of cake. And then, the tongue for talking. This is a big problem, right? We talk. Prabhupada compares it like a frog, he's croaking. Just spending his time, but it's calling the snake. So we're talking, all this Brahmakata, village talk. It's just wasting our time. We're coming closer to death without making any solution. Just idle talk. The whole radio, television, everything is full of this prajapa. Idle talk. And we enter into it by hearing it, we repeat it, we get caught up in it. And this way our valuable time is being spent. And then of course, the belly, pushing on the stomach, you know, we've had enough and we want more. Same line, Prabhupada says there's a line. The tongue for tasting, the belly, and then the next is the genital, pushing us. So much trouble is there because we can't control our genital. In the world, illicit sex, unwanted population. So much problem is there on this simple point. So they're claiming to be scientists, but they scratch their head. Why are there so much social problems? We went out last night on Harinam. It looks like the whole area is a social problem. Everybody looked like they were in trouble. Trying to enjoy with their motorcycles. And their music. So I couldn't believe the music there, coming out of the bars. So loud and obnoxious. And you can see that they're taking drugs and drinking and stuff. So the problem is there. Everybody knows there's a problem. And then on the billboard, the problem, you know, you can see also, come and enjoy this is sex. Yeah. So everybody knows there's a problem. What do the Prabhupada call it? A pinprick in the social body. If we have a pinprick in our body, we feel, well, what is this? You know, we can't be comfortable. Some pin is always pricking up. But everyone knows that there's a pinprick in the social body. And even in the greatest nation, America, now we just beat the hell out of this small country, so we feel good. Strong America. But there, you haven't examined yourself. You don't see that so many problems are here? Unwanted population, and crime, and drugs, and so many problems. But we can't solve them. Even though we have big, big intelligence, plenty of money, because the problem is existential. Means that it's not just material, it's something beyond. What is that? That we are like the fish out of water. We want to be happy, but there's no happiness here. We're all frustrated, ultimately, by old age, disease, and death. Therefore, the advice is given, Atata Brahma Jigyasa. That means now, in this human form of life, you should make a serious inquiry into the real problems of life. These are the real problems. Old age, disease, death. Nobody wants these things, but they're coming. The real problem. Who am I? What is the meaning of life? What happens to me when I die? The animals can't inquire like that. So this is a gift. Nature has given us this gift of this developed intelligence, but instead of using it in a proper way, we use it to increase our animal business. And then we become worse than animal. Because animals are acting according to their nature. But human beings can act in so many horrible ways. Torture each other and so on. Animal may go, the tiger may go to kill the deer. But he doesn't, you know, he just kills him and eats him. It's not like a sadistic thing that he gets into. But human beings, because they're acting on the animal platform, they become worse than animals. Therefore, we should understand that this human form of life is not meant just to loiter here and try to enjoy, make money and be happy. When Prabhupada was releasing one of his disciples, there were two disciples that were so much farther from Prabhupada, that Prabhupada told him, actually, you don't need a spiritual master. In other words, he was indirectly cursing them. Of course they need a spiritual master, but they were so puffed up about their own capacity, their own intelligence, that they were causing disturbance to Srila Prabhupada's movement. So he said, that's all right, you don't need a spiritual master. And you know, the last thing he said to him, make money and be happy. That's the curse. That's the curse of the spiritual master. Everything. What do you mean that's a benediction? No, no, that's a curse. Because then you become covered. You're making money, or you're happy, and then the time is going by imperceptibly, and the next thing you know, you're at the death's door, and you haven't made any, you haven't used this human form of life in any substantial way. The same example is there. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was traveling with Nityananda, and they came to one sannyasi's house, and he was trying to get them to drink wine. But before that, he blessed them. Oh, may you live long and be happy and be wealthy. And Lord Chaitanya said to him, that's not a blessing, that's a curse. And then the sannyasi said, just see, in the Kali Yuga, nobody will appreciate even the well-wisher something like that. It's a pastime like that. So everyone thinks this is the purpose of life, make money, be happy. But if nobody's happy, even if you make money, you still, the problems will be there. Still, how can you be satisfied when you're living in this body, when these six things are pushing you against your own interest? No matter how much money you have, it's like Hari Kashyapu. He was so powerful, he had all the money, all the power, he was controlling even all the demigods. On his order, the sun was rising, everything was being done by his, but he still wasn't happy. He was restless, his eyes weren't looking, because he wasn't in harmony with himself. If we're not in harmony with ourselves, how can we be happy? We have to live with ourselves. We have to live with our mind. How can we be happy when our mind is our enemy? Therefore, the first business is how to control the mind. How to make the mind our friend. We can read in the sixth chapter. This is the business of yoga. So Arjuna says, well, it's not possible. But Krishna explains, no, it is possible. How? By engaging your mind in my service. This is the easy method. Okay, you have your mind. Use it in some way to satisfy Krishna, to satisfy the spiritual master. Then you'll be happy. Otherwise, just like Prabhupada told that devotee, you don't want to take my direction, but you're taking the direction of your mind. Go here, go there. It doesn't make you happy. I saw the same devotee 2 years ago. He's living like a hippie in New Mexico. He still had no money. Had a young girl. He's about 55. He had about a 22-year-old wife or girlfriend, whatever she was. And he was still completely out. He was out of it. He wasn't using it. He was talking about aromatherapy and this and all kind of new age stuff that he was into. But he wasn't into Krishna consciousness. Because he was following his mind. Instead of following the direction from the super soul, or the direction from the external manifestation of the super soul, the spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada. Or Krishna. Krishna's words in Bhagavad Gita. These should be our guides. Guru Sadhu Shastra. Not our mind. We make our mind our guide, we're going to suffer, that's all. We're going to remain here in the material world. But of course the mind doesn't like the idea that you should neglect it. Therefore, it will push us. No, no, no. Forget about this Krishna consciousness. Just take my advice. I have something wonderful for you. Therefore, Raghunath Das, he prays to his mind. He has 11 prayers to his mind. He says, oh mind, my brother. We have to separate ourselves from our mind. If we think we're the mind, then we're lost. But with little intelligence we can see, my mind is changing from morning to night. But I'm the one that's observing that change. I'm not my mind. I'm observing my mind change. We even say, I've made up my mind. I made up my mind. It's you who's different than your mind. So, this is the beginning. How to step back from the mind and watch it like a child. You have a small child. Yet you see he's doing this, going this, but the adult is there to oversee. So the intelligence is there to oversee the mind. This is what gives it. This is what makes us special. We have intelligence. We don't say neglect intelligence. We say neglect the mind, because the mind is just like a child. It's going in and in. But the intelligence is very useful. The parents are like the intelligent. They're watching the child, making sure the child doesn't do nonsense. So the mind has a tendency to do nonsense because it's the sixth sense. It's being controlled by the senses. Being pulled by the five senses, indriyas, the eyes, the ears, the tongue, for tasting, the touch. So the intelligence has to be there. Okay, now, you did this before, it didn't make you happy. Why are you doing it again? But we don't, our intelligence is weak, and the mind is strong. Therefore, even we know it's not for our good, we still do it. We neglect the intelligence becomes carried by circumstance, by the senses in the mind. And then, what are we without intelligence? We become dangerous. Dangerous to others, dangerous to ourselves. Human beings are the most dangerous because they're unpredictable. They can just do anything. Like these suicide bombers. Just go. And, you know, an animal won't do that. An animal never commits suicide for some political purpose or whatever. What kind of stupidness? But human beings are more dangerous because they're mind, they give up your intelligence. Forget about intelligence, just I'm going to do what my instincts tell me or whatever. Whatever they're thinking, I don't know. So, let us cultivate our intelligence. Real intelligence means we should act for our long-range benefit. Long-range benefit means what is the interest of the soul? So, this is what we're teaching. What is the best thing for the soul? This is what Bhagavad Gita Krishna is teaching. This is what Srila Prabhupada is teaching. So don't just neglect this. Use your valuable human form of life for finding out what is the best thing. Okay, any questions? Bar, Prabhu? Anashi?
I was wondering, you know, it seems just like in the Bhagavatam, sometimes these different personalities mentioned here, they were visible on Earth, you know, but so why is it that in modern times...
No one the Prabhupada said in the Kali Yuga, many guys won't come to the Earth, even to pass urine. He once told us in Japan. Because just like last night, we went out there, I said, I mean, why? Why would you go there to where all these people are such passionate ignorance? When Prabhupada first came to Boston, he wrote a poem like that. How have you sent me to this place, Krishna? Which is so full of passion and ignorance. But then he said, there must be some reason. So please make me dance, make me dance, make me dance. Wonderful poem. You familiar with that poem? And he signed it, the most insignificant beggar. So, the condition is very hellish. We think it's normal, but it's really hellish. I saw last time we went into the city, you know, it's a hellish scene there. Young people are just passionate ignorance. They're lost to themselves. So why would the demigods come to such an environment? They may come when, you know, Vishnu is here and there's a sacrifice. They may come here into the temple room. I see there's somebody dancing on the roof here. Right?
But the planets and things, you know, how sometimes they'll photograph off planets and things like that. What do we say about that? I mean, because those planets are fairly close to the Earth, it seems like those persons would have.
No, but like I mentioned, in different dimensions. There are different levels of that we can't see. We can't see so many things. So, they may be existing there in their own dimension, and even the scientists go there, they won't see to the moon or whatever. And they won't come and show themselves. In other words, when they're coming here, they're showing themselves to Prithu because he's not an ordinary king. He's the, you know, powered representative of the Lord, Shaktivesha Avatar. Anyone else? Okay, the Bhagavatam key.
Yeah.